Why is my phone?
No, that's
is
mine.
That yours?
Okay. All right, welcome to the WAN Show, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a bit of an unusual show for you today.
Yep.
James is out. Luke is out. Everyone else wants to go home early because we were actually only in the office one day this week. So the only person that I could wrangle to join me on the WAN Show was the one who couldn't leave without me because I'm her carpool. My wife, Yvonne. So, guys, we've got a great show for you guys today. Tesla competitor Rivian raises another $1.3 billion in funding, meaning Tesla might actually end up with a worthy competitor. The Intel Xe DG1, or the creatively named Dedicated Graphics 1 graphics card, has a new round of rumors. Western Digital has started shipping 20 terabyte hard drives, so there's definitely some room for discussion there. And the iPhone XR remains the best-selling phone of 2019. Did you have anything that you in particular wanted to talk about today?
I am just sitting down to look at this doc for the very first time, so I think we're just gonna wing it.
Sweet. Let's go ahead and roll that intro!
Oh boy.
Just so you know, they can hear you right now.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm just making sure you know. The entire time we're live, assume that the entire internet can hear everything you say. So if you're going to talk about, you know, small body parts, just, you know, make sure it's at least humorous.
I don't even know what to say to them.
Sponsored by Displate, Honey, and Squarespace. All right, so why don't we jump right into our first and most important topic of the day, the Intel Xe DG1.
So, oh, really? Okay.
EEC filings have leaked information about Intel's new dedicated graphics card. So for those of you who are sort of just getting up to speed with this, Intel has actually been a major supplier of computer graphics hardware for many, many, many years. It's just that it hasn't really been computer graphics hardware that is that anyone especially wants to use. Now, way back in the day, Intel's onboard graphics were terrible in basically every meaningful way. I mean, you remember computers with onboard graphics?
Yeah.
They're bad, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but the thing is, they were bad for reasons that they aren't really bad for anymore. So back in the old days, when your integrated graphics was on your Northbridge, was where you'd usually find it. So that was on your chipset, separate from your CPU. It would actually suck up some of your system memory. Well, I mean, integrated graphics still usually does that now. Anyway, that's not the point. So it would suck up your system memory, oftentimes a significant chunk of it. And back when system memory was really expensive, it was slow. And in some cases, it was not very efficient, so that Northbridge would end up with like a noisy fan on it. So there were other solutions. NVIDIA, back in the Enforce chipset days, used to ship integrated graphics versions of their chipsets, and these didn't necessarily solve the efficiency problem, but they solved one of the other big problems, and that's that integrated graphics used to have horrible compatibility for games, let alone enough performance to run them. Sorry, what is that sound?
That's the heater up there.
Oh, did someone crank it?
No, I think it's still on a scale,
okay,
so
cool.
It's automatic. But
anyway.
You say it was bad for games, but I could play Dangerous Dave back then. I can't do that anymore.
Yeah, but that's different, okay? That's like DOS compatible. That's Windows switching from like using a DOS kernel to the NT kernel. Okay, anyway.
All I know is I can't play my game anymore.
Okay, you actually can play that game. I believe that game is on Good Old Games.
Oh,
if you go to GOG.com, I bet you can find Dangerous Dave. So you go on that fetch quest while I run people through what was wrong with integrated graphics. GOG.com. Okay, so yeah, we can talk about that a little bit. I don't know what I'm going to say about it. Our Apple Pro Display XDR is here. So anyway, the main problem was not necessarily even the performance. It was just outright compatibility. So either it would lack the features, you know, like hardware transform and lighting or whatever else, or the most up-to-date DirectX feature set, or it would just have such broken, terrible drivers that even if the game should run, it wouldn't. It would just crash all the time. And so Intel, over the last 10 years or so, has come a long way. So their onboard graphics are now so power efficient that they can bake them right onto the CPU themselves and still hit sub-100-watt TDPs. Their drivers and feature set are now basically up to date. I think there's still a lot of work they could do in terms of catching up to what AMD and NVIDIA are doing with respect to things like sharpening filters and all these like cool features that you can enable in your games, like a 3D, screenshots and all that kind of cool stuff. They're a long way away from that. But in terms of just basically functioning in games, they are worlds ahead of where they used to be. So if you've got good efficiency and you've got, decent compatibility and you've got the feature set sort of down, then why not scale it up? Now, unfortunately, it's not really that simple. And, what do they call it? Gen, I think, is what they call their onboard graphics that are built into their CPUs. These little tiny, tiny graphics chips was never really designed to go ultra wide. Not like the monitors, but it was never designed to be like a wider design. So they've had to re-architect this basically from scratch, as far as we can tell. So DG1 is supposed to be a proper, dedicated graphics card. And initially, my understanding is Intel wasn't making a ton of noise about it from like a consumer or gaming perspective. But then they ran out and they hired a bunch of, gaming and enthusiast community people to handle the messaging around this. They grabbed Chris Hook from AMD. They grabbed Kyle Bennett. Actually, I don't know if Kyle Bennett was on the GPU team specifically. Anyway, he's not there anymore. So they grabbed Chris Hook. I'm trying to think of who else they grabbed. But there was this like big push towards better messaging and a better relationship with the enthusiast community. And so that's got people thinking, okay, maybe it is going to be like a gaming graphics card. All right, so here's the latest information that we've got. The specs include 96 execution units, which incidentally seems to be the same as what they're planning to use in their next generation 10 nanometer Tiger Lake CPUs. So that would put its performance on par with onboard graphics. And then there's three SKUs listed: DG1 external FRD1 accessory kit, discrete graphics DG1 8 plus 2, and discrete graphics DG1 6 plus 2. The latter could be designations for gigabytes of RAM, but that's not really clear.
So wait, can I ask?
Yes.
So they just made a new integrated graphics card.
Right. So what it looks like right now is that they're going to ship what would be integrated graphics, but on a discrete card with its own frame buffer built onto it.
Is it supposed to be really cheap or something?
Well, we don't know.
Okay.
There is some speculation that Intel is working on drivers for like multi-GPU performance scaling. And so then there's some speculation that maybe this could be intended as kind of like a nitrous boost card for your system that only has integrated graphics, and the two of them will like work together or something.
How many systems actually have only integrated graphics now? Or how many people actually use only integrated graphics
now? Well, lots of people do, but mostly at the low end of the market. So the thing about dedicated graphics is it tends not to really make a ton of sense below about the $100, $120 price point, because there's so much cost overhead in building a card, getting an HDMI license, like it's like $2 per connector or something like that. Like that's nothing in the context of a $1,000 graphics card, but it's a big deal when you're trying to hit $99.99. You got to put a cooler on it. That's another, $7 or whatever. Like there's all these things that are kind of fixed costs, packaging, shipping and logistics, just time on the SMT line as they're producing the damn thing, because it takes up exactly as much space as something that you could sell for $200 or $300 or $500. So there's all this, there's overhead, even if some of it is just in the form of opportunity costs. You still have to QC it the same. You can't just ship a dead one, so you still have to, put it in the hot box and run it for 24 hours or whatever, make sure it works. I don't know, or maybe you don't, whatever. But the point is there's a lot of overhead.
Why are they all saying F? Sorry, I'm distracting you, but is something wrong?
Kind of stuck with. I don't know. I have no way of knowing. Float plane is fine. Twitch is fine. And people are saying F in YouTube. So I have no way of... Yeah, I have no way of fixing that. Our preview looks good. And this is why we've been getting really, really frustrated with YouTube streaming lately.
Okay, they're going crazy. All right, anyway.
Anyway,
sorry.
So there's all this overhead involved in building a graphics card. So low-end discrete cards tend not to make any sense. Now, AMD had this idea back in the Radeon, like, 4,000, 3,000 days. So this is like, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, whenever it was. That one of the ways that you could make low-end cards make more sense was if they worked together with the onboard graphics that are built into your APU, as AMD calls them, which is a CPU with built-in graphics, running in Crossfire, then at least you're not throwing away one or the other. You're getting the combined performance of both of them, and you could make that kind of make sense. Now, as soon as you get into higher-end cards, the overhead of trying to communicate with those onboard graphics cores basically means that any positive contribution is pretty much wasted, but at the very low end, maybe it could make sense. So that's where some of the speculation is coming from. I believe it was like someone found some Linux code that seemed to suggest that Intel was working on multi-GPU. The specs for this thing, 768 shader units, 96 execution units, seem to suggest that it's going to be similarly spec'd to their upcoming integrated graphics. For my part, I don't know if I buy it, because the amount of frame buffer here doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like, there's no way that you'd need 8 gigs of VRAM for something that's competitive with, like, an RX 570 or 1050 Ti. I mean, I guess you can get RX 570s with 8 gigs of VRAM, can't you? So, if the Tiger Lake graphics core is similar to Ice Lake Iris Plus, that would put performance of DG1 at roughly a 1.5x improvement over the 64 execution unit Iris Plus, now putting it in 1050 Ti and RX 570 territory. I mean, it's not the threat to NVIDIA and AMD that, or especially NVIDIA, that everyone out there has been hoping for, but I mean, I guess it's a start. The thing to me that's really baffling about all of this is that Intel has been sharing such like riced out, like juiced up looking imagery of this card. Like, let me see if I can find it.
Sure.
Intel DG1 render. Let's have a look. Intel set sights on whatever. Intel discrete GPU struggles. Yeah, I'm trying to find out which ones are the ones that Intel has actually shared. This might just be a cool render from someone. I don't know. Maybe I've fallen for it. Guys, if anyone has a link to any renders that Intel has actually directly shared for their upcoming graphics card product,
okay,
that
so,
would be good.
So
to know.
In what world would you consider this a good thing then, that Intel has made this thing? Is it just if the price is really good and it works in combination? Like, in addition to whatever you already have?
Oh, no. I mean, it's undoubtedly a good thing.
Okay. So then people are just upset because it's not as good as they thought?
Okay. So it's a good thing, but only for a certain customer. So if you're someone who plays nothing but Dota, League of Legends, Rocket League, and you want to upgrade an older system, and you want... And, I mean, for all of Intel's faults, the products are reliable for the most part. They make mistakes. I mean, I think the speculative execution issues, you know, your Meltdown, your Spectre, all that kind of stuff, they definitely make mistakes. But when it comes to hardware engineering, if nothing else, they build a reliable product, whether it's an SSD or a CPU or whatever the case may be. So you've got this reliable brand name. I mean, something that graphics card makers, especially the low-end ones, are notorious for is terrible warranty support. So they've got the support infrastructure set up around the world. So they're this trusted company that could bring this entry level graphics card to market for people who have an older system that they're just looking to add just enough capability to in order to play esports titles online with their friends.
Okay.
If you're in a market like Brazil, where you have literally hundreds of percent tariffs on anything that you buy, you know, every $10 cheaper for something that's in the same performance tier as like a $150 card. That makes a big difference to the affordability to you, especially if your income isn't very high. So having more options, always fantastic for the market. But I think that the enthusiast community, especially with some of the hires that Intel was making around the time that the graphics unit seemed to be spinning up and Raja Koduri moved over from AMD and all this stuff was happening, the enthusiast community, I think, got the idea that we were going to be looking at something very, very high performance. And this speculation was fueled by rumors that Intel was really targeting the data center space, where they wanted to go up against things like AMD's Radeon Instinct and NVIDIA's Tesla cards in like supercomputing applications. Now, that may still be possible, and that may actually be why we're seeing this Linux code around multi-GPU. Maybe it's not about, you know, Intel Crossfire or SLI or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it's not about putting this discrete card into an entry-level system and getting a performance boost. Or maybe they'll do that too because they're already working on it anyway. Maybe what's more likely is that we're going to see like some honking giant card that's got like 16 of these things on it. That's all powered by like a couple of 8-pin PCIe connectors, because remember, guys, that's what Intel does well. Extraordinarily efficient GPUs that you can pack right onto a CPU. With that said, AMD also does that very well, and actually in many cases better, but the point is we're speculating about what Intel might be doing here, not AMD. So maybe what we're looking at then is we're looking at many of these operating on a single card, many of which you could slot into a server, and maybe cumulatively it has a lot of performance, but that ultimately probably won't be that meaningful for enthusiasts. So I think this is just a matter of enthusiasts seeing like fan renders like this, which as far as we can tell is not real at all. This is just concept art done by, a student from Brazil. So people are looking at stuff like this going, okay, you know, finally someone to, you know, give NVIDIA some humility, but no, it looks like...
I thought that's been AMD recently.
Intel, yes.
Okay.
To NVIDIA, not so much. NVIDIA is running a process node behind them and still competitive, if not better, at almost every price point. Because NVIDIA really over the last... I mean, I'd say ever since CUDA. So, yeah, almost over the last 10 years, NVIDIA has really tried to differentiate on software. Because NVIDIA launched some, and I guess it's been probably, you could say, accelerated ever since their dud of a 400 series. So they've launched some bad hardware products. But NVIDIA's whole argument over the last, you know, really especially 5 to 7 years has been, right, so there's the performance. We can talk about FPS per dollar until we're blue in the face, but that just becomes like a who can slash their price the best, who can get their cost the lowest. That's a fool's game is their attitude about it. So they've really been focused on trying to build software that differentiates their product such that if they're 10% slower at the same price point or if they cost 15% more, they're like, okay. Well, if you want GeForce Experience, let's say, which does have redeeming features, or if you want, our awesome built-in encoder, or if you want this great, you know, screenshotting, you know, feature that's built into some games, or whatever the case may be, then you're just going to have to run NVIDIA. Things like in-home streaming, they were one of the pioneers in that space. I mean, now anyone can do it, NVIDIA or AMD. G-Sync's another example, which now you can run on AMD or NVIDIA. It's not quite the same solution. So that's kind of their whole thing is like, look, we built it a little better, so we're just gonna charge more. And AMD has competitive products, but really only in the several hundred dollar range. As soon as you get up into kind of the $500 or so range, AMD doesn't have anything compelling. As far as we can tell, Radeon 7 was just a way to burn through some GPU inventory that they couldn't move to their data center clients. And then it was forgotten about as soon as it appeared. So yeah, I'm speaking for the entire PC enthusiast community. We want a competitor to NVIDIA, a legitimate competitor in the high end, and we were really hoping that if AMD couldn't get their act together, Intel would step in, motivated by chasing that business in the data center where you can sell, you know, tens of thousands of GPUs on a single PO. Motivated by that, they would come in and they would compete in the gaming space, which is less lucrative, but certainly a high volume market and something that is worthwhile to participate in. It's just, it might be baby steps. We might be looking at something that's pretty much, you know, for running CSGO at decent frame rates on a budget, and then if we're lucky, it'll scale from there.
Okay. Well, I feel like I got a really good history lesson just now.
Yeah, hopefully the audience was into it. Yeah, it's funny. I feel like I tend to explain things more thoroughly if I can't just take for granted that the person sitting next to me already knows what I'm talking about. So that's interesting.
Thanks.
Why don't we talk about Western Digital and their 20 terabyte hard drives? Here is, and we can talk about sort of the technical details a little bit later. So this was posted by André Argenu on the forums. And we'll go through this stuff later. Is anybody actually asking for a 20 terabyte hard drive?
You are, aren't you?
Am I?
I don't know. You just bought a bunch of hard drives recently. Not hard drives. SSDs. Are these hard drives or SSDs?
These are hard drives.
Oh, is this more like... No, that can't be right. Is that right? Do data centers use hard drives or SSDs?
They use both.
Okay. So is this more for data centers and all that stuff again?
Here's the thing. Okay, so you know what? Fine. Let's run through this. So they're sampling enterprise OEMs with 20 terabyte UltraStar DC HC650 hard drives utilizing shingled magnetic recording and helium-filled enclosure. So the helium is to improve the efficiency of the drive as the platter spins because there's more air resistance, although it's helium resistance now, it's not air. And shingled magnetic recording takes the tracks that are laid out in circles on the drive platter and actually overlaps them a little bit. We've done some really good content on this in the past. Basically, what it means is that there's no penalty while you're reading it. It means you can squeeze them closer together. There's no penalty while you're reading it, but if you need to write it, well, here, give me another shingle. Perfect, thank you. If I need to change this middle shingle, now I need to also delete this one so that I can get at it, change it, and then put this back. So there is a write performance penalty with shingled magnetic drives. So Seagate has used shingled magnetic recording in their archive series in the past, and I've actually used them. I have found that the write penalty, particularly if it is a write once, read many application, doesn't really matter that much. But your mileage may vary. If you're going to try and write a ton of random data to it, like sequential's okay. If you're just archiving like a bunch of video footage, which is the only thing I was using them for in the time we had them deployed, hey, no big deal. But if you're going to hit them with a bunch of random I.O., you're really going to suffer because every single one of those bits that you need to flip is going to have a whole bunch of them that you need to then upend, move somewhere else, flip it, and then rewrite. It's a total mess. And really, it's actually kind of akin to the way that SSDs write, which is part of why writing performance on SSDs is so much worse than shingled magnetic drives. Yes, guys, I understand that they are functionally very different on a hardware level. I just mean conceptually they are similar in that you might need to change a very small thing, but you actually have to erase and move, and then change it, and then put other stuff back once you're done. The new drives utilize 9 platters. Are you familiar with what a hard drive platter is?
It's like a little metal disc.
Little metal disc.
Yeah.
So traditional hard drives used a single platter, and you could have recording space on both sides.
Yeah.
Now imagine this.
Having 9.
You've got 9 of those packed into a... No wonder they need to fill it with helium in order to keep the air resistance down low enough to make this thing even reasonably efficient.
So if one platter goes, does your whole hard drive go?
No, if one platter goes, you can in some cases, we actually did a great video about this where we toured Drive Savers. So someone like Drive Savers might be able to go in, replace the read head. So that's like this arm
that
sticks
reads,
out
yeah.
over all the different platters. They might be able to replace it and then put on a new one, because usually it would be that fails, not like the platter itself that fails, because it's just magnetic ones and zeros on a metal disc, There's not as much to fail, unless the read head were to
scratch
fail
it
spectacularly and crash. It's called a head crash. If that were to hit it, well, it might scratch a bunch of the data, but you might still be able to get a bunch of it back, assuming that you can get a new read head in. So anyway, where was I going with this? Right, you've got nine of these monsters. You've got this immensely complicated apparatus that's required to read off of them.
What's a... So it has a 2.5 million hour MTBF.
Meantime between failure. So that's really kind of where I was eventually going to make my way to with this. So they're advertising them for their sequential write use case because, single magnetic recording is not fast enough for random writes. So here's my problem. The only way that we can make hard drives faster is either by shrinking the size of the bits on the platters or by spinning them faster. Really, that's it. Because if you think about it like the way that a record player works, right? The only way to make the song go faster is to put the notes closer together or to spin the record faster.
Yeah.
That's all that you can really do. Now, Seagate actually is working on a dual actuator technology that would allow two separate read and write operations to take place simultaneously.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
The nine that are on these 20 terabyte drives, they would all move together. So if you need something on like the top platter, the bottom one can't go get something from somewhere else
actually,
on the bottom one.
Why hasn't somebody thought of that sooner?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
So on paper, this is great. 20 terabyte drives would mean that in something like a 60 drive Storinator, let's just do a quick calculate. Why is PowerShell opening? Wow, I hate you so much. Okay, so 60 times 20. In something like a 60 drive Storinator, in a single 4U rack with just 60 drives, you could put 1.2 petabytes of data. Even if you're giving up, let's say one in every six drive, as you might, to something like, RAID Z2 or, some kind of parity data protection, you could put a petabyte of data in a single 4U rack. That's incredible. The problem is that the only way to speed up the performance of these drives is complicated technology like dual actuators. Remember, we're in these tiny 3.5-inch enclosures. Spinning it faster, which adds more drag as the platters spin. It adds more complexity because all of a sudden everything has to be done
more
to within...
More potential failure.
Right. That's exactly where we're going with this. So hard drives, their capacities keep getting bigger, but their performance is stuck because we can't spin them faster and we can't really put the bits meaningfully any closer together. All we can do is add more platters at this point. And so what that means is that a 20 terabyte drive at what is pretty typical, let's say like these are shingled. So let's say it can write at 200 megabytes a second, all right? So let's do some quick napkin math. We can do, what just happened?
No, I don't know what you did.
200, hold on. 200 megabytes a second times, 60 seconds. Okay, so we've managed. What can I do for you?
He wants me to.
He's doing math, talking about how many shirts we sell at LTTStore.com. Bye!
Oh, okay, yeah, lots of shirts at LTTStore.com. Do we even have stock of anything right now?
Sort of, it's fine. Stealth hoodies, water bottles.
Oh, black and gold water bottles are back in stock, right?
No, stealth water bottles.
Stealth water bottles.
Okay, here's one.
Later.
All right. Yeah, we had a great holiday season. Thank you guys so much, by the way, on LTT Store. Okay, so. In a minute, I can write 12,000 megabytes. Okay, so let's do times 60 again. In an hour, I can write 720,000 megabytes. So times 24, so let's say in a day. All right, in a day, I can finally write almost the entire surface of this drive. So, do you remember, I think we actually talked about this back when we were in university. Although, I think it was in the context of USB thumb drives.
Okay. This is a long time ago to try to remember.
Yeah, I doubt you're going to remember, but the point is, guys, when we were in, like, probably I'd say around grade 10, USB thumb drives were, like, the biz. They were so cool. Remember that?
I don't know about grade 10. Maybe
grade
I'd
nine?
say... No, I'd say university for me anyway.
Okay, well, it was. I remember when I got my first, what was it? It was, I think it was 16 megabytes. I got my first USB thumb drive.
So you can remember how many megabytes are on your very first thumb drive, but you can't remember my birthday.
I remember your birthday now. I forgot her birthday the first year we were dating. I have never heard the end of it, as you guys can see. Okay, so anyway, back to USB thumb drives. My first USB thumb drive was 16 megabytes, and I was jazzed because I didn't have to use floppy disks to carry my assignments to and from school anymore. Like, wow. And I could even put files that weren't just text. Like if I wanted to share a cool song that I definitely got totally legally on Napster with a friend, I could bring that to school and give it to them and they could transfer it to their thumb drive. And it was like, whoa, I can take this to my computer at home and put it on my mini disc player, whatever the case may be. but around the time that I met you, we started to run into this problem. So USB 3 hadn't come along yet to fix it, but USB 2 thumb drives were getting to the point where the capacity was so large that, and there were still some kind of reliability issues with them, especially when you were using them on older systems, that you couldn't really count on them to not have some kind of a problem if you needed to get all the data off of it in an emergency or something like that. Like, it wasn't really safe to store that much data on this tiny thing. And I remember we had this conversation. Do you remember this at all?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I knew you weren't listening. It's fine.
I listened to lots of other things. It's not this part.
Yeah, that's fine. So the point that I'm getting to, and we solved that problem with faster interfaces. So now you can use USB 3 or Thunderbolt 3 to read and write off of these multi-terabyte portable drives. And we kind of fixed it by just going really, really way faster. But hard drives, in that time, hard drives have maybe doubled in speed, except that when I met you, a 500 gig hard drive was pretty sweet. And now we're talking drives that are literally, what, 40 times that size? Is that right? Am I doing the math right? Can you help me with the math here?
20 terabytes? You say 500? Yeah, that
500,
seems right.
Yeah. 40 times the size. So here's my rough... What is this? Why is this full screen? Here's my rough napkin math here, guys. Let's just make sure there's nothing incriminating. There's my rough napkin math. So in 24 hours, I can write not quite that entire drive. So at what point are hard drives just not practical for this kind of storage, even if they are cheap? Well, we might be there. Unless they're really cheap, unless you can literally buy two or three of them for the price that you could store that data on something else, and then you can just have it like duplicated, and in the event that something fails while you're trying to recover it, you just grab it from the other one, copy it over to, like, it starts to become this very complicated data management scheme. So hard drive manufacturers are still pretty bullish on their future. They think the hard drive is going to be around for a good long while. But I think that for general consumers who can't afford these complicated data management schemes, we might be getting close to the end, because I don't know about you guys, but I don't necessarily want, even in my home NAS, I don't necessarily want a drive that, remember, if I'm copying this over gigabit, is now gonna take more than 2 days. I don't necessarily want a drive that, in the event that I'm dealing with some kind of data emergency, is gonna take 2 days for me to know if it's gonna be okay. And the, like, especially crazy thing about this is if you talk to some data center clients, some enterprise clients, they're not even asking for this. Backblaze famously uses, I think it's, shoot, don't quote me on this. It's either 4 or 6 terabyte drives. Backblaze drives, which ones do they use? And the reason is that they've found that from a cost per terabyte, total cost of ownership perspective, the newer models actually have not had a great advantage for them. And they have preferred the better reliability of these less complex drives, even if it means that they ultimately have to deploy more servers over more cabinets in a larger area in the data center. Let me just have a look. So drive count. So they are using up to 14 terabyte drives now, but I can't remember which one was the bulk of their storage. Oh, it looks like they're using 12 terabytes now. So maybe I'm mistaken on that one. They did have higher failure rates with those 12 terabyte drives than they did on here. Guys, I can pull up their latest reliability report. They actually published this back in, it looks like, March. Remember too, though, guys, that, let's see, drive days. Oh, wow, actually, those Toshiba ones are looking pretty good. Single failure, annualized failure rate.
So what are drive days? The number of times it was used? Or, like, number of days it was used?
I think that's the total day, like, it's how long it's been used times the number of drives would be my understanding here. 2 million drive days. So yeah, it might be that that was outdated information. So either way, it's going to come down to this complex relationship between how much the drive costs versus how much it costs for the thing that it needs to go in versus how often it fails and how complex and disastrous it is when it fails. Some people are like, what about SSHD? So SSHD is basically a small SSD that's kind of like soldered onto a hard drive. And I think you may be sort of misunderstanding the purpose of SSHD if you think that it's applicable here. So any hard drive, whether it's got a small SSD cache on it or not, is ultimately limited by how fast it spins and how close the bits are. An SSHD takes frequently accessed data and caches it onto an SSD so that in the event that there's like a game that you always play, instead of grabbing it from the magnetic platters, it can grab that off the SSD and you feel like it's super responsive. Now, usually these SSDs are so small that something like a game wouldn't end up being cached. It's more like files that Windows frequently accesses, stuff like that. Or maybe, you know, components of DirectX or your graphics driver that it would access as you're loading up a game. So it can accelerate almost anything. But it doesn't help if the data doesn't fit in the cache. So when we're talking about writing to the entire surface of a drive, it would do meaningfully nothing. And when you're talking about reading from the entire surface of the drive, it's negligible again. So it wouldn't really help with that.
Who writes to an entire 20 terabyte hard drive over 1 or 2 days, though?
Well, okay, so here's an example. We're rolling a new petabyte project.
Okay, so I understand
so
when you're...
during deployment.
Okay, I understand during deployment, but that only happens theoretically once or twice. Like,
yes.
For day-to-day use, isn't this okay? This is a great way to... Like, if you don't have a lot of space in your house and you are slow-mo guys or whatever and you need lots of space...
So another scenario, and this is the dangerous scenario, and it might not matter today, but it might matter 5 years from now. Here's the scenario. You've got 8 of these things spinning in a little enclosure like this sitting on your desk. One of them dies. All right. So that's a total of 8 times 20 is 160 terabytes of data, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? 180 terabytes? Help
what,
me.
Eight
no,
times
160,
20,
yeah.
160, yeah.
160 terabytes of data. All of it is now at risk
because of
20 terabytes of data that now needs to be restored to another drive. Now, during that restore operation, I pull that failed drive as soon as I possibly can. I put in a new one. Now I need to wait.
2 days, I understand.
Every one of those drives has to be read entirely, and one of them has to be written to entirely. A process that could take over a day while I'm sitting there going, and I can't sleep. Can you tell I've gone through this before? You've seen me go through this before.
Okay. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just the way I use hard drives or used to use hard drives. It's like I would write to my C drive and everything would be on my C drive.
Yes.
And so if I lose a drive, my D drive or E drive or whatever, it's fine.
But that was back when a hard drive might be 80 gigs.
Okay.
So what have you got on there? You got 2 Blu-rays?
So okay,
nothing.
That's fine.
20 terabytes. You can have your whole life on 20 terabytes.
Okay.
And there's like a psychological component to this too. When people see 20 terabytes, just fill it. Don't think about it. Because we got to remember that this is from not necessarily a techie person's perspective as well. When you see a 20 terabyte storage drive in your computer, you might go, oh, gee, You know, I can store everything on this. And people don't practice safe backup.
Okay. That's true. I don't either.
So, well, no, I take care of it.
I know.
I make sure. Actually, our stuff could be safer right now. It could be safer. And I do.
I'm just glad it's faster. It was driving me crazy. I would sit there and try to open a file, and it would take like 10 seconds to load.
Okay, we've been through this. That was a power-saving measure.
It was dumb.
I had the
disks. You're talking about how, like...
I had the disks parked when they were not being used, which, by the way, means they're not sitting there spinning idly.
Okay.
Which
I think... just made it so that I never used our server at home.
Yes.
I saved everything to my desktop.
I know. Okay, so I
told... Which is very safe.
I told the drives not to... Yeah, that's not safe at all.
Well...
Because I don't have your desktop backed up at all, because why would I? It's just Windows. It's utterly meaningless at this point. It doesn't do anything.
Okay. Well, it's faster now, so that's good.
Yes. Okay, so I changed it so the drives don't go to sleep. You're welcome, my princess. I actually considered just moving the StoreNATO to home. That all SSD server that's probably worth like 30 grand.
Yeah, no, that's
but Jake,
unnecessary. But
Jake got mad at me. He was like, you what, mate? And so I brought it back. Speaking of bringing things back, I'm bringing us back to our sponsors for today's video, who I actually,
I think it was, do you need help? Do you not remember? Is that the problem?
I can't get the dock open because Google managed to log me out while I was sitting here in the middle of the thing. So the sponsors for today's show are Squarespace. You want to do a sponsor read?
Sure.
Think you got it in ya?
We use Squarespace. No joke. We actually use it. Actually, we do. I think the new LTX website is on Squarespace.
Literally in your talking points.
Oh, really? Oh, nice. both our LinusMediaGroup.com and LTXExpo.com websites are actually built on using Squarespace. If you haven't heard already, Squarespace is an all-in-one platform that makes it easy to get your website up and running quickly. And you can choose from tons of different templates. Find the one that makes the most sense for you and run with it. If you need help, Squarespace offers webinars, full series of help guides, or you can contact their 24/7 support team to find out how to build your site. This says SIT, but anyway.
I know, I always just ignore it.
Head to squarespace.com/WAN and get 10% off today.
Woo! Ooh. It's also brought to you by Honey, not my honey.
No.
Different honey. Hey, hon. Honey is the free shopping tool that finds the best promo codes whenever you shop online at sites like Amazon, eBay, Newegg, Razer, Best Buy, Walmart, and more. Those of you who have downloaded Honey using our code have saved over $100,000 in the past few months. And the best part of Honey is that, like I said, it is free. They make their commission from the sites that you shop at, not from you. So go ahead and install it. It's just two clicks. Colton, Brandon, Luke... I'm trying to think who else uses it around here.
We need to start using it. I haven't set this up yet.
You haven't set it up?
No, not yet.
Why not?
I don't know.
It has tons of great
time.
Features. It's got like a price history thing on Amazon, so you can see if the deal right now is actually a good deal.
I don't actually shop that much.
Oh.
Like, besides groceries. Like, grocery shopping is my new shopping.
That's so sad.
Parent life.
I know, right? Adulting.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, there's no excuse.
Yeah.
Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/lines. Okay. Make sure you use the affiliate link.
You're not allowed to get a new honey.
What?
I can get a honey.
No. Terrible. See, she claims to say my humor is bad. She's all like, oh, that's so cringe, whatever. She is just as bad. She just hides it better. Display. A display.
Oh.
Is a magnet-mounted metal print that looks a little something like that. They're durable and, hey, great news for my honey, you don't need any power tools to hang them.
I can use power tools, what are you talking about?
With over 250,000 different arts spanning a bunch of different styles and influences, displates are a fantastic way to spice up your home. And they feature easy magnetic mounting with no holes in the wall, and they're easily replaceable. Want to show the people how they can be leveled and taken off and put on?
Sure.
Thanks, Vanna. They plant 10 trees for every display purchased, and they've partnered with CD Projekt Red to create Cyberpunk 2077 prints, and they've done some Linus Media Group prints. Do you have one?
No, I don't. I saw the LTX one, though.
Yeah, you should totally get them to do one for you. So head to our link below and use code LTT to save 15%. So that's lmd.gg/displaywan.
And what do you mean I can't use power tools? I just redid your office. That required power tools. I made those Apple pencil holders.
Yeah, I saw that.
Uh-huh.
And I factored that into my statement, didn't I? That was the worst Dremel job that I've...
That was my first time using a Dremel. The next time it'll be a lot better.
Will it?
And Alex made me wear these really, really big gloves, so I couldn't hold it properly. Yeah, anyway, safety first.
All right, Tesla competitor Rivian raises another $1.3 billion in funding. Where's my $1.3 billion in funding, Miss CFO, over here?
I don't know. I haven't even heard of Rivian.
Okay, well, you will at some point. So the original article here is actually from everywhere. Everyone's reporting on this. Bloomberg, Ars Technica, The Verge. EV manufacturer Rivian, established way back in 2009, actually, has been playing the long game, keeping news and memes and smoking weed on the largest podcast in the world to a minimum while quietly developing their core technology in the background, like their batteries, powertrain, etc.
It's no wonder I haven't heard of them.
This year, they have raised funding numerous times. The first round in February, led by Amazon, yielded $700 million. In April, Ford invested $500 million. And in September, Cox Automotive invested $350 million. This is $1.55 billion. Then, led by T. Rowe Price Associates, they raised another $1.3 billion, bringing the total up to $2.85. So for comparison, Tesla has raised more than $20 billion in equity and debt financing over the last decade. With this new funding, they hope to have vehicles rolling off their once Mitsubishi-owned plant in 2020. I think ultimately I'm going to end up being right to wait on the electric vehicle bandwagon, because there's already some really interesting stuff. Like, on the one hand, you could go, okay, yeah, well, the Model S still beats Porsche's. Is it Porsche's? Model S versus Porsche. Yeah, Taycan. okay, yeah, maybe the Model S, like, still beats it or whatever. So I could have just as easily bought myself a Model S, you know, a few years back and have been enjoying it all this time. That's a fair enough point. But the flip side of that is that at least it's a competition that we're talking about. So by the time I'm ready to move on from the Volt, which I still need to do a video on.
Yeah.
By the time I'm ready to move on from the Volt, there could be enough competition that you can get something really sweet for a lot less than what you're spending now. With that said, the Model 3 is looking pretty sweet.
And I thought the Teslas were actually holding their value really well.
I have so many problems with the way that Tesla does things.
I'm not saying that I do or don't. I'm just saying they're holding their value well. If what you're saying is that you're not getting into it because of price and it'll get better, well, I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair. I just, there's things that I don't like about the way Tesla is going about this. So three things. I don't like how Tesla is approaching the right to repair thing. Not allowing people and non-authorized repair services to have access to the tools that they need to fix the car safely. I'm not a fan of what...
So can I just ask first, is that... So I know for a lot of things, like the Apple stuff, you guys are super against it, and I get why.
Yep.
But for the Tesla thing, is that because they have proprietary software that no one else knows? And so if they tinker with it wrong, then Tesla's technically on the hook?
They can still build tools. They can still build tools that will make it so other people can interface with it without giving away their proprietary software.
Got it. Okay.
Thing I don't like, number two, is this whole hardware as a service thing that's kind of creeping up on us. So Tesla has actually developed a very good reputation for keeping the software of their cars up to date and adding new features over time. But what it seems like to me is that they've been playing a very careful, very intentional long game here, because a recent update for the Model 3 is actually a paid update. So you can pay for your Model 3, assuming you have the correct hardware configuration, to go a little bit faster.
Hmm.
Now, these are things that they used to either have you buy at the time of purchase, where was I going with this?
Well, you were talking about how you have to pay for that software upgrade.
Right, or they would actually provide free upgrades over time as they realize that, oh, you know, the battery packs can actually output a little bit more juice. We can handle this. Let's just go ahead and roll it out. And that was really cool. And then now we're finding that they're putting software locks at the time of purchase instead of actually changing out the hardware depending on the features you buy. So software locks made their way in, I think particularly with their autopilot features and now with performance. And then now software locks are coming after the fact. So they're finding ways to monetize these cars on an ongoing basis. I think this is a really dangerous path to go down, but I also don't know what the right solution is, because what the existing big car manufacturers have been doing obviously isn't right, where they just put it out in the wild and go, eh, you know, if it's buggy, then I don't know, I guess that one has issues with the CD changer. Too bad. I mean, we'll fix it in the next model year. I guess you could just get a new car. So that's not right either. And I also know that ongoing software development has to be funded by something. I just am not a huge fan of, you know, having
the
my
subscription service to your car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Having my products be like, how do we know that we're not going down a slippery slope where I have to pay on a monthly basis to have that performance? Or maybe, oh, let's turn it into a microtransaction. So every time I press the pedal, like, you know, twice hard or something, I get the extra boost and it costs me 50 cents.
Well, they're not unlocking, or they're not locking anything that you were getting.
I hope
when
no one from Tesla is watching this right now. Microtransactions.
No, but okay, when you buy the Tesla vehicle, you're not, like, they're not locking something that you were already entitled to before. It's just locking future stuff, right? So you're paying what you're getting for it, technically.
As a hardware guy, I find it offensive that I paid for something that you put in there, or maybe I didn't pay for it. Whatever. The point is, you sold me this hardware that has capability X. So clearly, at the price I paid, let's say $50,000, you were making a profit on it.
Yeah.
And then, arbitrarily, you've decided that that wasn't the right amount of profit, and you want a little bit more for me to get everything that I paid for. It was all there.
Well, hardware-wise, yes.
Hardware-wise, yes.
No, but yeah.
But yeah, but they did all that software development. They are just artificially segmenting it. And now, arguably, they did do additional engineering and additional software development for something like a speed boost. And somebody's got to pay for that. So I get it. I just think it is an extremely slippery slope. The last thing I don't like is I don't like their marketing. I don't like them calling it autopilot. I think that is extremely misleading for what the capabilities of their autonomous driving features are.
Are you sure it's not autopilot? Because I read a newspaper article about these people in Richmond who were freaking out because this car in a parking lot was driving itself to its owner.
Right. So
is
that's
that
my problem.
Autopilot?
No. That was the summoning or remote control feature. And yes, they have features that are deployed today that are effectively your car basically driving itself as long as you have your hands on the wheel every once in a while. But there are documented cases of people being literally asleep at the wheel while their Tesla rips down the freeway. And I think that Tesla's marketing and branding creates a false sense of security, and I think it is extraordinarily dangerous. I think we're gonna have a hard enough time moving into an autonomous vehicle future without someone going in and bunging it up right at the beginning, causing legislators and Luddites and all the other people who are gonna hold up signs and yell about how bad this is, and they took our cars and whatever. They're gonna just add fuel to that fire and make it take longer than it has to. Because I want a level 5 autonomous vehicle as soon as possible, but it's not going to happen if someone screws up at level 3 and then it's just illegal for the longest time, even though we had the technology and it was there if only we'd been patient and we had set expectations correctly. Those are my 3 problems with Tesla. Those are the 3 reasons that I have a hard time supporting them.
To be clear, I'm not for or against Tesla. I don't actually care. I just wanted a vehicle that was, you know, the back mirror wasn't teeny tiny and I could actually shoulder check properly. So that's my only issue with the Volt.
100L3 says, ah, dangerous Dave, my childhood memories. You have a kindred spirit out there.
I've also dated myself a little bit.
Hey, dating you ain't that bad. Side hilarious thing, Rivian's vehicles now apparently have a feature called Tank Turn, which looks amazing. I mean, if you're gonna have a motor on every wheel, it might as well.
Oh, wow.
Donuts will never be the same, ladies and gentlemen. I think their truck looks like less ridiculous too, actually.
It looks more like a regular truck.
Yeah, but it still looks kind of futuristic and
kind
cool.
Kind of, yeah. But I mean, when you compare it to the Cybertruck, no. But yes, it does on its own.
But you can't, you know, dock an ATV on the back of it, I guess.
I guess. And you don't get that, I don't know. Like, if somebody were to see the Cybertruck on the road, they would know immediately. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's iconic.
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
And that's not really. I feel like you're kind of paying for the status symbol.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, but that's the thing. Tesla's done a great job of building that brand for themselves. I mean, maybe part of it is I'm trying to be contrarian. Maybe that's part of it. I can admit that.
I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Honestly, I get a little annoyed when I'm shopping for a car, as I was a year ago, and people are just like, oh, you're a tech guy, get a Tesla. It's like, it's not the only car manufacturer on Earth, and there are reasons that it might not be optimal.
Yeah, I actually like having our hybrid vehicle.
Plug-in hybrid.
Plug-in
to be
hybrid.
Clear. Yeah, not quite the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a hybrid doesn't necessarily have a large enough battery pack that you drive on purely electric.
Okay.
Or doesn't. Not doesn't necessarily.
Well, anyway, have you ever gone through the rationale of why you bought what you did, or are you saving that for the review that's never coming?
I was planning to talk about it in my review of my Volt that is coming, and I will do eventually.
Pretty sure it was supposed to come out like a year ago.
It was.
Well, I won't ruin it for everybody.
Let's just see if there's anything else that we really want to talk through. The iPhone XR continues to be the best-selling phone of 2019, in spite of the iPhone 11's launch. This is considered globally. Their selling price was adjusted in China and other markets this year, and the XR became even more affordable after the 11 released. 11 is also on the bestseller list, along with 3 Samsung and 3 Oppo smartphones. If you guys want to see the whole thing, it's on 9to5Mac. Apple Insider also reported that Apple earned 66% of the entire smartphone industry's profits in 2019.
Wow.
That's what happens when you differentiate based on software. It seems to be working out well for NVIDIA, seems to be working out just fine for Tesla, and seems to be working out pretty darn well for Apple because they don't have 66% of the hardware market share. Selling hardware ain't nearly as profitable as selling software. What else we got here? Yeah, this is pretty cool. Color e-ink displays are now available. I'm just gonna go ahead and bring up ctimes.com.tw. So that's pretty sick. E-ink, if you guys aren't familiar, is super efficient, so like on our Kindle.
Mm.
So, you know, you wouldn't watch a video using an e-ink display or anything like that because the whole point of it is that it only refreshes as often as the on-screen image needs to change. So that's what gives it that stunning efficiency, and you basically don't need to power it once it's actually got the image on screen.
So this is for drawing and...
You could draw, but yeah, no, it would be, I would see it as something that you could use for reading. So now you could read a children's book in color on your reader.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
is this cool just because it's color now?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. That is really cool actually.
Yeah. E-paper displays have been single digit color in the form of like dye capsules. So this contains 4 pigments per micro capsule for a total gamut of 32,000 colors, and it costs $800. For this 13.3-inch advanced color e-paper display. Now, obviously, we're hoping for prices to come down a little bit in the long term. if we're going to be buying, you know, Kindle readers or whatever with this technology. But every time we see an advancement like this, it's a matter of time before it makes its way into a reasonable priced product. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it'd be really cool to, you know, read Bernstein Bears or whatever.
It would be, but it's also just e-ink. Not the same when you have, like, a kid in your lap and...
I know.
For them to be able to feel and touch and point.
But here's the thing. Like, you got to look at sort of, like, macro societal changes that are taking place in the world.
No, this is me being an old person.
Where are you going to store all your books?
I know. I get it.
We were driving down the street, and I was just looking at this building off to the side, and I was like, they're building something. It's a giant construction project, very expensive. And I was like, it's another one of those bloody U-Store things. Are these that popular? Because I've never had one. And then the moment that the words were out of my mouth, I was like, oh, right, obviously. Like, we got into the real estate market here in Vancouver at a time when, I mean, we were very lucky to be able to afford a detached home when we did.
It was a very long time ago. It was before it kind of took off like crazy.
So this was almost 10 years ago.
I know.
Almost 10 years ago, we bought our home together. And we were also very lucky in terms of our life stage at that time. So we were only 22?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we were 22 when we were shopping and you know, getting a mortgage and all that stuff. And it just so happened that Yvonne finished her program with her pharmacy degree. A lot of people think that she married me for my money. Actually the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Yvonne just graduated with her pharmacy degree, and then she got a job almost immediately as a pharmacy manager, clearly destined for business. Mm. So she had the income. She was making six figures basically right out of university, which was sick. And then I had flunked out like 2.5 years prior or something like that, at least 2.5 years prior. And I had been working that whole time. Now, I had accumulated zero student loan debt in the time that I was in school because of the summer painting program that I was doing. I was able to make, it was like the worst time of my life, but I was able to make enough money to entirely pay for my school just in the with my summer job, which was pretty sick. And I had even helped pay for some of hers, and her parents had helped pay for some of hers.
I still had massive student loans, but
I wouldn't call them massive in the context of what's big now.
That's true. That's
you
true.
Had student
but
loans.
I had student loans, but I was also like working during the school year, during the summers, trying to pay it off. So basically, I graduated
with very little student debt.
Yeah.
And so we were in this great position where our credit was good because I'd had a credit card since the day I turned 16, I guess.
Yeah,
when my parents were able to co-sign with me because they were like, look, you need to get your credit score up. There's just, I had like a $500 limit or something like that. Like I had a super low limit, but the idea was I just needed to use it for everything, pay it off on time, and build up my credit score. So my credit was good. Her credit was good.
Yep.
She had income, and then because I flunked out 2.5 years prior with no student debt at that time, I had worked for 2.5 years, and I had a big chunk of down payment because I had no expenses. I was living with your family, which was super weird.
Mooching off us.
Super weird. So we were extraordinarily lucky, and sometimes it's easy to forget that, and we look at something like yet another one of these U-Stores going in and go, like, what is everybody using these for? And I went, right, of course. Because for the price of what we paid for a detached home 10 years ago,
people are
buying a townhouse
or a
condo now. And it's like, right, where are they going? I mean, we already struggle with, like, where the devil are we going to keep, like, the snowboards and stuff when the kids all want snowboards?
They're not getting snowboards.
Where are we going to put this stuff? But it doesn't matter whether it's snowboards or ice skates or surfboards or...
Yeah.
Bicycles,
there's
even.
Yeah.
Where do you store this stuff? And I went, oh, that is a market that if I was like, if I had a bunch of money and I wanted to get into a business, like, wow, the storage business, because there's no shortage of people wanting to acquire more stuff, but there's definitely a shortage of places to put it. So I forget how I got onto this subject.
We were talking about, kids' books.
Right, where are you going to put
storage.
Your books?
Yes,
yeah,
I know.
We're
going
to have to leave it behind. So we need technology that allows us to just have one thing that you put on the coffee table and that's it. That's the, whoops. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
That's it. That's the family book.
Yeah,
that's all there is to it.
It just makes me sad. We just bought one of our kids this book for Christmas. That's one of those, like, you lift up the flaps and you see what's under it. There is going to be.
Touchscreen.
Yeah, that's just not the same. But anyway, I know. I'm being kind of an old person.
You're being an old lady.
I get it. I get it. I got to move on. Be
okay.
With the times.
You're my old lady. Well, I think that's pretty much it for the show. We should probably get home, speaking of our kids, and maybe go get them. We will see you guys again next week.
Are we supposed
super
to
chats.
Do super chats?
Yes, super chats.
This is the part of the show that I always end up showing up for and being like, we got to go. So I remember that we have to do them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Viewer activity. Are these them? Yeah, these are them. There's quite a few. Okay, don't send in any more because I'm not going to look at them. Thanks, SKHS video. Luke looks much shorter and cooler. All right. Corey says, good holiday with your family. Excited for new tech. Yeah, we did have a good holiday. Thanks, Bite Hunter. Thanks, Arion. Tryout time. Is this related to the older Intel GPU prototype? No, that was Larrabee. Totally unrelated. No way to get that working. Joseph Igarashi says, try pronouncing my last name. I dare you. I guess I already did. Alejandro says, here's me on Twitter. Look at the video, please. Dang it. It's probably going to be spam. And I'm not promising I'm doing this kind of stuff in the future. Okay, I cannot...
Should I read the other ones while you look for it?
I cannot find this easily.
Plus one. Oh, from Furuku? Plus one for Yvonne on WAN Show. Do Jake times... or Jake and Dennis next. And Rob Photography. Man, I'm having a hard time reading from here. I think I need to get my eyes checked. Hi from Europe. Why does LTT upload a list of info to Facebook for targeted ads? And how did you get my info? Good night. What?
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 Why does LTT upload a list of info to Facebook for targeted ads?
We didn't upload a list of info for you to Facebook. I don't know what they're talking about. I think Facebook looks at your data and gathers that info for themselves.
Arjun, Luke's looking jacked today. Bipolar Princess, yay, Yvonne, love seeing you in videos. Hashtag girl power, any LTX 2020 news?
Actually, we picked a date, but I don't know if I'm allowed to tell anyone yet. But I think we're gonna be sending out a save the date soon. It sounds kind of like a wedding or something, but yeah.
Anyone notice that Linus has a blue tongue?
I actually did. I thought it was just the light, but...
No, I was eating a ring pop.
Okay. What are you, like five?
Jack Elliott says, five. That worked out well. Thomas Herfin says, really cool idea, best boss ever. No idea what you're talking about anymore, unfortunately. Lego lad, play well. I know future-proofing is a bit of a meme, but what components would you use to future-proof 1080p high ultra at 144Hz for the next couple generations? I wouldn't. Like, are you running at it now? Then run at it now. And then when it doesn't do it anymore, look for an upgrade that runs it. That's the best way to handle it. Levi says, yo, bro, just wanted to say I better get tech-linked. Oh, yeah, tech-linked is coming out today. Don't worry. EvoCat, hi, Linus. Was the video released on Floatplane about upgrading your VR running at true 60 hertz? Threw me off a bit. Was wondering. True 60 hertz? I have no idea what you're talking about. My VR headset runs at 120 or 144 hertz, if that's what you're asking. Alexis says, bought an RTX 2070 Super in part thanks to your buyer's guide. Oh, you're very welcome. Ilya, you were going to deploy a new intro this year. What happened?
We had people working on it.
Yeah.
It just took a while.
It took a long time. Yeah. Honestly, I don't know if I like it that much.
No, but you know what? We actually did one of those troll intros in the Office Makeover video, and I actually really liked it.
Oh, really?
I was like, what, we just slapped that together in like 30 minutes? Why don't we use that? Oh. We'll see.
Well,
I think it was actually supposed to be kind of an MKBHD-like intro, so
right.
I don't know. We'll see.
Executive, happy holiday to you and yours. Thank you very much. Charles Martin, thank you. ZaxTube, thank you very much. PXC 550s for 180 CAD, no-brainer? I wouldn't say that's a no-brainer purchase. You can get some really nice headphones on Massdrop and then pair it with a microphone, and that might end up being like a... I don't want to say better, because an all-in-one is better for some people because it's convenient, but a higher quality solution. Henry Cavill, according... Oh, I can't read your name. I'm so sorry. Thank you for the rubles, though. Henry Cavill said on interview that he wishes to build his own gaming PC. I don't know how to get in touch with him.
Yeah.
But I'm more than open to it. If you guys want to hit him up and let him know... I'm super easy to get in touch with. Just the email on the YouTube page is that.
Or
someone
Twitter.
Will look at it. No, no.
Not Twitter?
No, not Twitter.
Oh, I think other people monitor your Twitter.
No, not
okay,
necessarily.
Fine. Email,
yeah,
email.
Not in like the mentions and stuff. I miss tons
of
important
mentions. Like a direct message.
Lucas says, I've been following you since the NCX days. Here's some money from Google Rewards. Thank you. Ben Nicholson asks, when are the dates going to be confirmed for LTX?
I don't know. I can't say that.
Okay. Mr. Steele, are there any plans to stop streaming on YouTube if problems continue? We don't really have a choice. Like, we have to stream on YouTube. What else are we going to do? One API is amazing to compete with CUDA. Okay. Thank you, Saba.
I think you missed a couple.
Thanks, Tony. And thank you very much, Trap Boy. Thanks, Windows XP. I'm fine. Thanks, Sean. Oh, wait, Sean. RG Phone 2 is $630. Is that USD? Oh, man. Like, at that price, I'd just get a OnePlus. Ah, but it has a headphone jack. The camera sucks. Like, it sucks. And, like, it's functional. Yeah, like, you could get an image or whatever. But, like, it's not competitive. So if you use your camera and you care about it, it's like, precious memories have a lot of value to me, and I'll use a crappy phone experience for a better camera, for sure. Fire in the Hole, is the personal VPN video still in the works? Absolutely, yes it is. Mr. Devin says, Janice on TechLinked and when? When? More Yvonne too. Has anyone actually asked Janice if she wants to do TechLinked?
No, I don't think so. I can ask her next time she's in.
Highlander asks, is it just me or does Yvonne look bored out of her mind?
No, I'm good.
Thanks, Sebastian. Grap.
I'm just busy absorbing all the information.
Thanks, Dustin. Pee pee poo poo, pee pee poo pee. That's, okay. That was worth $5, evidently. Robert, LTT Minecraft go live when? Beta's getting tons of players, but clearly we passed the server launch date of December 25th. It'll be done when it's done. Jake and team are working on it. We don't want to launch something that's not good, so, or not at least decent. So give us time. Give us time. Gypsy Dog says, who's prettier, Luke or Yvonne? Hands down, Luke.
Oh, wow!
Robert says, were you able to get the LG C9 to pass high-def audio from your PC to your receiver, or did the PC only see the TV as capable of stereo? Not quite sure what you're talking about. So the issue that I had with the DisplayPort TV is that DisplayPort does carry audio and multi-channel audio, no problem, but what it doesn't carry is an audio return channel. So you can't go straight from your PC to your DisplayPort TV and then have an HDMI connection out to your receiver so that, let's say, some other device that's connected via HDMI to your receiver can also take advantage of high-def audio. So that's the problem, is that you need this audio return channel so that everything can use it, even devices that are connected directly to the TV or to the receiver, both of them can take advantage of that pass-through to the receiver. So wait, sorry, no, the one connected to the receiver, that's no problem. It's the one that's going through the TV. That's where you run into trouble because you have to pass it through. with a TV, I wouldn't think that would be a problem. I haven't actually checked and made sure that my center channel is running, but I'm pretty sure that it is because it does have ARC, and you just have to, if you're having trouble with it, you do have to set the audio output on the TV to ARC. Otherwise, it'll use its onboard speakers. So I'm not sure if that's what you're asking. Thanks, Matt Taylor. Delivery date for the Beta Squadron shirts. Honestly, I don't know, but it should be reasonably soon, given that you ordered it 2 weeks ago. So we had the shirts in stock, but they weren't printed yet. But we knew we were going to be printing them pretty soon. So I believe they are printed now, so it shouldn't be long. But guys, remember, even after the holiday season, the couriers are running a little behind from the backlog, so you can expect things to take a little longer this time of year. All right. Ben, any plans for a non-video editing workstation machine? I'd love to see benchmarks for compiling Linux and Firefox, mechanical engineering simulations, machine learning frameworks for common applications. That's the kind of thing that we would love to do more of, but we really need the expertise in-house in order to make it make sense. Now, we did do one that was focused on CAD a little while back. Most of those principles are still true, and you could build a system around that video today, but we haven't really looked at things like simulation or machine learning. Hayden says, visiting Calgary soon. Places you suggest visiting. I have no idea. I've never been there.
What do you mean? We just went to Banff.
That's not in Calgary.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm thinking Alberta. Close. Okay. Well, it's like 2 hours. I don't know. If you have time to visit Banff, I would. It's gorgeous there.
Mr. Lyosi says, Linus, the only nerd who looks attractive with an earring. Ha ha! Ha ha ha! Thanks, Citrus. Flukas X, I tell people LTT is great, now I send them money. I guess I'm a shill. Time to expose myself. Hashtag Fluka's shill for LTT. All right, can do just a couple more here, guys. Thanks, Augusto. Appreciate it. Thanks, Sergey. Pickles says, Happy New Year to you and your crew and your beautiful family. Here's to another year. By the way, Yvonne, try and keep him from working too hard.
Oh, man, that's a failed thing. Failed experiment.
All right. Austin, would love for a shout out for my latest devlog. All right, well, there you go, Austin Cameron.
All right.
That's it, guys. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll see you again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
You mean next year.
Right.
Yeah. Happy New Year, everybody.
Different bat year.
Yeah.